I decided at a fairly early age that I was never going to work in any one area for more than about 7 years, and I was going to keep working until I died at 150 years of age. So retirement is not kind of in my horizon. It sort of reminds me of, you know, retiring racehorses and, you know, stud bulls and so forth. You put them out to retire in the back paddock, and retirement's never really sat well with me at all. So really, you know, what retirement means is different for everyone, you know, and there's no use trying to prescribe for anyone what it should mean, because it just doesn't make sense. You know, it will be different for everyone.
Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson, an Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. Anne will also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
My guest on today's show has a different view about retiring, and that is, he doesn't want to retire. Neville is an entrepreneur at heart, a highly sought-after public speaker and educator. He's a successful business owner, a corporate manager, an author. Neville set out on his professional career and rapidly climbed the corporate ladder, further expanding his skills before becoming a sought-after speaker and educator in the field of project management. He has presented quite a number of practitioner guest lectures over the last 5 years to postgraduate project management students. As a successful business owner, Neville is currently working on and growing his business Today for Tomorrow Group, focusing on project services, consulting, training, public speaking, as well as balancing these with property investment activities. Neville has travelled extensively throughout Australia, the UK, Europe, Southeast Asia, and the Pacific Islands. He is the member of professional bodies and associations, including the Australian Institute of Project Management. Neville lives in Brisbane. Neville has authored 2 books, and he is not slowing down anytime soon. Hi, it's Anne Nelson from the Retire Well, Retire Happy show. And today my guest is Neville Garnham. And Neville is from Today for Tomorrow Group. It sounds like a really interesting business name. How are you, Neville?
I'm very well, Anne. How are you?
I'm great. We've had a little bit of rain recently, and that's what we want in the tropics. We want the grass to grow.
Yes, we've had a bit down here too, which we needed very much in Brisbane.
Yeah. So you are a person that I believe has said that you're never going to retire. So that's something a bit different to what most people say. You've had a very long and successful working career through your public life, and then now you've gone on and formed your own company. So can you give us a bit of background about where you've been and where you think you're going?
A lot of the things that I've been involved with I've been involved with projects and programs and so forth of work, and they're all about changing things, all kinds of change that have involved putting organizations together, changing business systems, without the IT part, including the IT part, business development, a lot of other things. And over my 50 plus years of working life, I'm very proud of the teams that I've been able to work with to affect billions of dollars worth of change. I love being able to talk to groups, particularly here in Queensland, and I'm happy to have them say to me they've never heard of me. That's the way I like it, because it's very much the teams that have worked on these things, and I'm very proud of everything that we have done to bring about change. And even though they've never heard of me, it only takes me, 10, 15 minutes, which we probably haven't got tonight, to indicate to people that the things that my teams and I have done have impacted the lives of virtually everyone in the audience, either them or their parents or their children and other people they know in the transport sector, as well as in other sectors of life. So it's been long and diverse, and I'm very pleased with all that we've accomplished in those areas.
Fascinating. And you've mentioned to me that you're lucky to be alive. Is that correct? Something happened to you a long time ago?
Well, it was doubtful that I was actually going to survive the early stages of birth and so forth. But I was at a point by the time I'd reached 9 years of age, penicillin had stopped working, and it was about the only thing that was available those days to deal with the lung infections and structural damage that I had in the lungs. And at 9 years of age, the specialist basically said to me, "You're going to be dead in 10 years. Now, that was in an era when children were seen but not heard. But I didn't much like that. So I piped up and said, "Well, you mean I'm not going to make it to my 21st birthday party?" And he said, "Well, you'll be dead in 10 years or so. So trust me, I have hung on to that also with great tenacity ever since." And when I saw that same specialist 25 years later, he said to me, I don't understand why you're here. You're supposed to be dead." So that was really encouraging. And it was at 9 years of age that I basically decided that I'm going to live to 150. And really, this was post-war time, and I saw so many people coming back and, dying within brief periods of retirement and all of those kind of things. I decided at a fairly early age that I was never going to work in any one area for more than about 7 years, and I was going to keep working until I died at 150 years of age. So retirement is not kind of in my horizon. It sort of reminds me of, retiring racehorses and, stud bulls and so forth. You put them out to retire in the back paddock, and retirement's never really sat well with me at all. So really, what retirement means is different for everyone, there's no use trying to prescribe for anyone what it should mean, because it just doesn't make sense. It will be different for everyone in terms of their life experience, what they've done and so forth. I guess a lot of where I try to encourage people these days is, look, okay, you're about to retire, but you've got a lot of knowledge, you've got a lot of experience, you've got a lot of understanding that people, particularly younger people, do not have, do not know, do not understand. Why not try to do something to get them to understand? Because unfortunately in our society, I think there's been this tendency to elevate awards and studies and so forth to such a level that people almost think that a mantle of wisdom falls over them the moment they're given a degree or some kind of award. And they really need to couple that and continue learning, couple it with experience and continue learning. And I think older people have got a capacity to do that if they choose to do it. And I'd like to encourage them to choose to do it.
Back a few years ago, it was considered common to retire at the age of 65. And like you said before, 20 odd years ago, some people didn't live much past then. But these days we're all living a lot longer. And I know people that are in their early 70s that are still working. So the traditional retirement is really changing even now.
It is. And I strongly suspect that there will be a change in that age limit. I'm sure it's a hot political potato that will come up, but I think the retirement age will rise. That's just my assessment of the situation. I could be dead wrong, but I believe it will change. We need a range of people to still be available to work. But the whole nature of work, I believe, will change also. We can't keep doing things the way we've always done them.
Do you think older people would balk at the idea of having a boss that was a lot younger than them?
I'm sure that there are people who have that mindset. And it's unfortunate at times that some of these younger people do feel that they've gotten a degree or whatever it might be, and therefore they kind of lord it around the place, and that does not help. There are some who are becoming rather more understanding that all that a degree does for them is actually put them into a framework of lifetime learning, and they need to seriously work on that because they've got a lot to learn. I keep saying, I've learned a lot, but the more I learn, the more I know how little I know. And, you've got to keep into a lifetime learning cycle. Otherwise, you're going to mentally die. And I don't want that to happen either. I want to be mentally as alert as I possibly can be when I reach that 150.
I've heard that before about to keep generating new pathways in the brain, and it's all to do with not stimulating the brain. It's to do with when you don't do anything new and you keep repeating the same old things. And that's totally different to what we used to think.
That's right. And, it's part of the challenge, and part of the reason that I challenged that doctor who told me I'd be dead within 10 years was because I didn't like what I heard, but I figured there's got to be some other way of dealing with it. And, for my particular condition at that point in time, the traditional medical advice really was, you're going to die, so sit in the corner, we'll wrap you in cotton wool. You can't go out and play outside because you'll pick up germs and that will hurt you. You can't really play with other people, other kids, because you're going to pick up germs again and that's going to hurt you. You can't play rugby league. You can't play sport because, you might be injured in that process and it'll damage your lungs even further. And, of course, that was all the stuff that was told to the school, from the specialists, and I couldn't do all of these things. So I had to find a way. And one of the things, I found a number of ways, but one of the things was, okay, I can't play rugby league, but gee whiz, I think I'm probably smart enough that I can learn the rules. So if I can learn the rules, maybe I can start to referee some of these games. I'm not going to get knocked over, whatever, et cetera, but it means that, if you look at the referee runs around on a football field more than any of the players because he's got to be all over the place. He's got to be where the action is. So it meant that it forced air into my lungs and enlarged what I had left in my lungs. And that was my way of, fixing or contributing to fixing that problem. So it's not fixed. It's not, it's not fixed in any sense that that I can say it's something I can forget about. I can't. I'm still under treatment for it. But, you've got to find ways physically and mentally to stay alive, to stay alert, and to keep going. The other part of your program in terms of retire happy, in my view, happiness is a choice. You can either lie down in a ditch and think that everything is terrible, or you can get up and keep going. And yes, you'll get knocked down at times, but you've got to get up again and make a choice that, hey, this is a pretty wonderful world of ours. It's got some downsides at times, but it's a pretty wonderful world, and we really need to choose to be happy and get on with it, whether in working life or in retirement, whatever that means for different people.
Yeah. I've heard you say that concepts of retirement are different and that you equate it to death. Is that getting back to the fact that if you don't keep yourself occupied, like I have heard of busy executives have retired and they've just fallen flat on their face because they've lost their job title and whatever privileges that came with them, and they're just back to being, you know, just a person at home without a job, and they get a rude awakening.
Absolutely. I think that's something that happens all too often, because part of where I come from in terms of mentoring and coaching and so forth is I've got a great deal more faith in everyday people and their leadership capability than I have in most people who are in what I call positional leadership. And this is something where I think our society has been a failure, because we've relied very heavily on positional authority, or positional, what's called positional leadership, which is based on authority. And we make the assumption that the person in that position has all the answers. Well, gee whiz, they don't. And until such time as the person recognizes they don't have all the answers and they work with their team to develop the kind of solutions that need to be developed, it's always going to be a very difficult time. And if they're relying totally on what they know and their authority and all of those kind of things, it's going to give them a completely false sense of security. And when they retire, there's particularly males, they don't have an alternative thing to do. They don't necessarily have the networks anymore. They know people in various places, but they've never really connected with those people even in those authority positions. And yes, they retire and they're dead within a short period of time. One of the things I used to do when I first came up to Northern New South Wales and the Gold Coast in the 1980s, I was doing some part-time work with the Australian Bureau of Statistics. And in that, I was working on their labour force survey, where we used to have to go into set houses every month for 9 months. And the number of times on the Gold Coast that I found older women living alone, and the problem was that their husband had retired, so both of them had shifted from Melbourne or Sydney up to the Gold Coast, and the husband had died. And they've got all of their network of relatives and friends and so forth are back in Melbourne or Sydney. And they're up here, they haven't formed a new network of people that they can deal with, and they're absolutely lonely and they're dying in their houses, locked away from other people. And, you know, at times it's good to be able to be alone, but you can't do that all the time. You need to be able to interact with other people. And if you haven't got the experience and the skill sets to set up those new relationships with new and different people, you're going to have a very tough time as you get older.
Yeah, that's right. We need to have something to occupy ourselves and to join in community activities. And I believe you are involved in charities. Would you like to talk about what charities you support?
I've got particular concern with all of the kids with cancers and parents dealing with kids with cancer type situations. And that comes about predominantly because my mother died of cancer. So I've got a great concern, particularly for kids who are dealing with it. And I've seen some fairly horrific cases of kids needing to deal and the parents needing to deal with their kids' cancers. So I'm happy to try and do what I can when I can to talk to groups or whatever in support of those particular areas. I'm also very, very keen on trying to do what I can in domestic violence type or anti-domestic violence situations. I've had a number of instances where there have been people that I've known who have been seriously subjected to domestic violence, including having members of staff who were subjected to domestic violence and trying to help them get through that. So basically in those kind of areas particularly, but also in any situation where I can try and get people to understand that leadership's about them. Leadership starts with the person. It's not something that's out there and disassociated from them. They need to be able to lead their own lives. They need to be able to find their way through the uncertain pathways of employment, of unemployment, of dealing with various other people along the way. So, you know, that'd be kind of a few of the areas that I'm particularly concerned about.
Yeah, and that's what you mainly talk to them about, leadership?
Basically about leadership. It needs to start with you, and too often it's kind of seen as something remote. It's somebody else's doing the leading. But I've seen too many instances where if you leave the leadership to somebody else, well, nobody leads. And that's a pretty poor situation to have.
Yes, just in the world, it's usually someone from it within the community are the ones that identify the problems, and they need people to step up and take a lead, don't they?
Absolutely, absolutely.
You are also an author, and as well as running your own company, would you like to just mention your book?
I wrote a book about 6 years ago now, released in 2013. It was basically focused around leadership or integrative leadership in projects. So the focus was around some of the examples of good leadership, of poor leadership that I've experienced through the years of working on different kinds of projects. And I just tried to spell out in very practical way to people some of the things that you don't work well when you're trying to run projects. There are people who like to take all the glory for what's been done. And, in there I quote one particular guy who used to totally forget about his team, but for any aspect of his project, he'd go and get photographs of himself at the work sites and with the contractors and everybody else. And all the internal stories that he wrote were all about him and what he had done. And he couldn't have done it without other people around him and the other members of his team, but they never got any credit in what he did. And that's not leadership. You know, that's just being egotistical. You know, it's just not good. So I guess both in the book and in lecturing at Bond Uni, in lecturing at University of Southern Queensland, what I've basically tried to do is tell what I've called the war stories. You know, you can plan to the nth degree of what you want to do in any level of change, and that's what a project's about. It's about change. You can plan it to the nth degree, but I have never yet seen a project that runs exactly the plan. So you've got to be able to deal with you've got to be flexible enough both in mind and thinking processes to be able to work out, okay, this has happened, how do we solve that problem? And I guess I started at a pretty early age, you know, problem solving in terms of my own health and so forth. So I developed those skills in how do you deal with the problems that will come up in every change you are going to try and make. And it's the war stories, really, that I tried to bring out in that book and, in any lectures and training that I've given.
Thank you very much for giving your time today to share part of your story with the listeners of the Retire Well, Retire Happy show. So what's the name of your book, and how would people get in touch with you if they wanted to get to know you?
The book is called Integrative Leadership in Projects. There's another one with war stories that I've actually written and put up on Amazon called Tomato Soup Heaven. You know, we like to have these, you know, in wintertime, we like tomato soup and whatever. It kind of keeps us warm. And I was looking at the, you know, what do I call it? And I kind of did a little bit of chicken soup for the soul type thing from Jack Canfield by calling it Tomato Soup Heaven. But again, that's something about the war stories of trying to make change and how you do and don't show leadership in those kind of things. So that's up there. But look, the best way to get in touch with me these days would be to simply write to me at neville@todayfortomorrow.com.au. And I'll deal with any queries that come in at any time, and happy to talk with people. And if I can help with any of those charitable institutions, I will certainly try to do so, or in any other way with teams.
Mm. Yes, I'm sure there'd be some charities around that be interested in hearing your leadership talk.
Thank you.
And before we go, see, you aren't retiring anytime soon. How's your family feel about that?
Oh, the family accepts the reality of that. Family's a bit dispersed at this point in time, but they're not unhappy about that. Just as long as they can get hold of me to spend some time with me from time to time, but they recognise why I feel that way. I mean, who knows? You know, I might get another 10, 20, 30 years down the track and decide, yes, it's about time I gave it away. But for the moment, I'm not letting those thoughts come to me. I want to live for as long as I can, and I want to still be very, very active physically and mentally, and, you know, make a difference to the best that I possibly can for other people in this world.
So what is your age now?
I'm, what am I? 73 I was in August, yes.
Wow. Well, congratulations.
I have to stop and think about it.
Right, well, you know what that means.
Well, I haven't made it to the halfway point to 150 yet.
Oh, okay. So you want to get to three. I always remember my grandmother saying she was very proud when she made 3 score and 10. So you're 3 score, 10 and a half
well,
is halfway.
Well, time will tell, won't it?
All right.
We don't know the time and place.
No. Thanks very much. It's been delightful.
No problem. I'm very pleased to be able to talk with you tonight, Anne. Take care.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.